Hi everyone, and welcome to this lecture where I talk about social media and influencer marketing. This is once again the positioning of the lecture to the course framework, and mainly when we talk about social media and influencer marketing, we are talking about the operational activities of digital marketing, and I would say that especially stages reach and engage. So social media, as we have discussed in previous lectures already, can be used as a form of advertising to reach customers. But then again, if looking at all the affordances or opportunities, how you can use social media, it also serves very well the engagement stage. So having deeper connections and dialogue with your customers where you can actually build customer relationships. So I personally at least perceive that social media are strongest at these two stages. Okay, the learning goals are mentioned here. So after this lecture, a student should be able to, first of all, recognize the unique characteristics of social media. Secondly, distinguish different social media marketing strategies. And thirdly, explain why influence marketing can be an effective means to engage customers. So here we go. Let's start with the social media marketing in general. And here are a couple of rather old social media related articles. These are at least two of those articles that are some of the most highly cited papers in academia. And it's because they are old, but they were also seminal studies to start figuring out how the social media really influences the communications landscape in marketing. And on the left-hand side, you see a figure about the new communications paradigm. And it basically explains the basic process, how do we do communications in marketing? So usually the organization is who initiates marketing communications. They might be using some agents to help them out creating those communications. And then we come up with a promotional mix or different types of tactics that we can use in communications. So the conventional ones, advertising, personal selling, public relations and publicity, direct marketing, and sales promotion. And this is where we see the first way how social media has influenced the marketing communications process. So the first obvious thing is that we have new channels that we can use. They mentioned blogs that were very dominant in the early stages of the social media age. And then social networking sites that are still very valid, video sharing sites such as YouTube and so on. These channels might have changed a bit, but the key idea of the framework is that, as said, social media offers new media spaces to communicate to customers. The key difference, however, is here how social media has really transformed the communications landscape. So, if we think about, let's say, conventional advertising, the company designs and creates an ad and then they deliver it to a channel or another. But in the social media, the unique aspect is that consumers can spread the word and they can talk with each other. So this was one of the first kind of radical things that scientists as well as practitioners kind of noticed, that the logic differs a little bit. In the early days when we did communications in marketing, it was very one-dimensional, or let's say one-way communication. So the company creates the message and then publicizes it somewhere, tries to promote products or whatnot. And then they were hoping that the consumers would react positively to that ad, or they would remember that product or whatever they were promoting. Now, in social media, this process is a bit twisted because the consumers are no longer passive recipients of those messages, but they can actually actively react to those. So not just by thinking that, okay, this was a good or a bad ad, but they can actually start spreading that message, or they can also post to social media that I really hate this ad, so they can participate in this discussion. So this is the very first thing to note about social media, that it really transforms consumers from passive consumers of commercial content into active actors in this communications landscape. On the right-hand side, this is, by the way, probably the most cited social media study, where they talk about viral marketing. And this virality is the key unique affordance of social media marketing communications when you think about it. So in the old days, it was a lot about the budget. So with big budget, you got more reach with your advertising or other communications that you did. Now, in the social media age, things are a little bit different because often the reach is influenced by whether or not consumers actually share your story. Or at least, at best, if you want to leverage the unique possibilities of social media, you come up with something that consumers actually are willing to share and sort of act as brand and ambassadors. And that is the very unique aspect or opportunity in the social media. So, without going into the details, word of mouth marketing has always been the most effective means of marketing communications. So, if you compare yourself, how much influence it has when you see an ad, usually not much. Let's say there is a promotional ad about the product. We often don't even remember those. But then when your best friend tells you that this is actually a really good product, it has a lot more influence on you. And the key difference in social media is that we are no longer limited to the recommendations we get from, family members and friends, but instead we are exposed to recommendations by people that we hardly know, or sometimes we do not know those people, if you think about product reviews and these types of things. So this electronic word of mouth is one of the key aspects of social media. And if you successfully use social media, you might be able to pull off these viral effects that we're going to discuss today a bit more. So you could argue that the virality of messaging is the holy grail of social media marketing. And here's a really nice video, and I would like you to check out the part that starts from 6 minutes and 10 seconds. It's actually quite a long video, but this particular section kind of explicates the difficulty in creating virality. So, I mean, all companies would like to leverage these viral effects, but most commercial messages that we send in social media do not really catch up any attraction. And in this video, they kind of highlight this problem that's really, really difficult. But first of all, what he says in this video is that it needs to be something very, relevant and topical, something that people actually care about. So if you talk about your products, chances are customers don't get super excited. They might be a bit interested, but it's not something that people would like to share. So it must be something super topical and something that really creates emotions. And that's probably the best general advice that I could give when it comes to viral marketing. The thing is that it's really hard to really engineer virality in social media. So you can definitely think of topics that consumers might be interested in. But then again, if your real goal is to achieve viral effects. It's quite difficult, really, to engineer. Things can go ways that you didn't expect. And then, of course, there is also this algorithmic element here. So we don't know exactly how the social media algorithms work. And practitioners are always talking about that it's so surprising that a video that was not that good got a lot of views and attraction, and then some other that were really well thought and so on didn't really get that kind of attention. So it's really hard to engineer. So when it comes to viral marketing, it's actually much more about reacting to maybe some lucky coincidences or reacting to some topical discussions. So sort of participating in discussing something topical, let's say something going on in the society or so. And then people might actually hear your story. Here is one case study of Stanley, which is a company that produces these types of, well, Stanley cups or thermo mugs, or I'm not sure how to call them, but it's this type of a cup that keeps your drink cold, or I assume also warm. The case story in a nutshell, again, here is a nice video explaining the story better than I can do. But in a nutshell, there was this a lady whose car was burned, and she had left her Stanley cup in the car. And even though the car burned into a wreck, the Stanley cup or the drink inside it was still cold. There was even ice on it. And this lady posted this on TikTok, and it started to gain a lot of, views and virality. And when it comes to viral marketing, now the key learning here is that Stanley was, of course, very happy with a consumer who was sharing this story and about this virality. But the Stanley also wanted to boost this virality further, and they reacted to this original post by posting a video where the president or the CEO of Stanley was first of all thanking the lady for sharing this story. And then he promised to send some Stanley cups for her, but instead they promised to replace the vehicle with a new one. So this is when the things got, even better. So there was a lot of virality in this original post, but a reaction like this from the company was something that also gained a lot of attraction, and not just in social media, but in traditional, news media outlets and so on. So they get, I would say, almost global exposure for Stanley Cup with this lucky coincidence. So, as mentioned before, often when you hear about these, viral campaigns or things that got viral, it was rarely really engineered by a company, but it was more about talent from the company to react to something that's going on. So this was a very, lucky coincidence, and they got, even though replacing the car cost some money, they got so much exposure that it's probably the best campaign that they will ever be able to pull off. And maybe as a final note, what does this require from the organization? It's not easy for all the organization to create to react in this way and so quickly. So in just, a couple of days, the CEO has the authority to replace the car and spread the story. So it also requires an organizational culture where these types of things are appreciated. So it's definitely one of the success factors of this case. Okay, let's get back to more theoretical points of views. On the right-hand side, you can see a description of the Echoverse, and the Echo relates to the idea that the contemporary communication landscape has a lot of these echoing effects. So when something happens in the company communications, it creates these echo among many other actors. And it is no longer so when it comes to the transformation in the communications landscape that successful marketing communications is about creating a great ad and then publishing it and expecting business outcomes. No, the success, especially in social media, is a lot of is or heavily dependent on how the people who are exposed to your content react to it. Are they going to share the story? Is the traditional news outlets going to get interest in your story? So this is kind of like the echoverse that they are talking about, which is just good to keep in mind that when you really have something of interest, things can go many ways. But it also means that it's really hard to control the effects of your marketing communications because it's a lot about how the message will be mediated by the other actors. On the left-hand side, then again, you see a figure of a blurring and broadening of brand meaning. So I'm now been talking about the communications landscape, and these are then the related implications to branding. And if I start from here, where the figure talks about the product brand, this is the conventional way how branding was considered already decades ago. So how do you create a brand? Well, you have a product, and then you start advertising that product. Highlighting the features of the product, but also creating associations with the product so that the product is not just, a basic product, but it is, something cool, something luxurious, something sexy, something high tech, whatever that idea is, that was the kind of conventional idea of branding that the product is not enough, but we need to create these associations that affect the consumers psychologically. Now, what has changed, which relates to this figure on the right-hand side, is that the branding efforts have been blurred. So it's no longer so that companies can control their brand image or awareness or anything like that. Money takes you only so far, but then at the end of the day, it is actually how consumers perceive your brand and what consumers are talking about your brand that actually create the contemporary brand image. So what are customers talking about their experiences with your product or service? How do they share this word? This is actually the most important part of branding these days. So no matter what kind of associations you're trying to attach to your product, the brand is ultimately about the customer experience and all these discussions that consumers have with each other. This is again thanks to the social media. Okay, so that's the blurring of branding, but also the brand meaning has expanded. So it's no longer necessarily about the product at all, but it can be actually about the person. So these person brands have become quite dominant, and many products, services, and companies are associated with certain person brands. Perhaps the most obvious example is, Elon Musk, who is heavily attached to the Tesla brand. So if you think about all the associations that you have regarding Tesla and generally how people look at it, there is probably no other product brand that is so heavily associated with the person, Elon Musk in this case. And how people really think about the product brand has not so much to do anymore about the actual Tesla products, but instead it has something to do how we look at Elon Musk And as you probably all know, especially here in Europe, you have these people who are very fond of Elon Musk. They think he's a genius. And then we have, I would say, increasingly those people who are highly critical about Elon Musk. There are a lot of people who say that they will never buy a Tesla because they hate Elon Musk. So that's where you know that I can realize the extreme example of how important these person brands have become. The person brand in the case of Tesla is probably more important than the actual product. Maybe that's exaggeration, but at least it's a big part of it. Where else this has been very dominant in recent years is all expert services. So if you want to hire a consultant or someone who is selling you expert services, you don't really care about the product brand or the company brand, but actually you want to have this particular consultant that you know and you think that he or she is the best expert in the field. So there, I would say this person brand has been always the case, but now when you look at, let's say, LinkedIn, you can see how people are really trying to promote their personal brand. So they're not necessarily talking about their company, but they're talking about themselves. And this might also be a good idea to build your career. But I'm hoping you get the point. So in many businesses, you're not really the persons you're sort of hiring are the products. So that's where it's also highly ambiguous. But the last case here, which relates to both blurring of branding and broadening of branding, is this idea of an ID brand. And this is what we especially see a lot in the US. It can also, like, you can get examples from Europe as well. But I would say that especially the American companies, I would say, are very active in different types of brand positionings that we are used to. So it's no longer so often, especially in consumer products, it's no longer about the product, the old brand, but it's about an idea. It's about a social cause. And many companies want to attach themselves to some of these social movements like sustainability. All companies are trying to position themselves as sustainable these days. Or then something more specific, maybe food waste, or maybe something to do with disadvantaged people or so on. So this is another key way to really differentiate these days, so that you're not talking about the product, but you're actually talking about a social cause or something topical that is happening in the society, and that can give you a leverage to actually produce content that people truly care about. Few people think are really interested in products unless they are just about to buy some of those products. But topics, themes that are important, we are all interested in those. Okay, going deeper into social media marketing and how it works. And here is again a very nice article that gives you a good overview of social media marketing and different strategies. And in this paper, they talk about the early days of social media, where academics and industry experts claim that social media will revolutionize marketing communications from product-centric one-way promotions to customer-centric many-to-many interaction, dialogue, and relationship building. And I was actually a student at the time when social media revolution was a highly hyped issue in business literature and especially in marketing. And I do remember all those statements that advertising will die, if not, this year, then maybe next year or in 5 years. And we haven't seen that happening. But the early promise of social media was that we get rid of advertising, and the only way to survive and be successful in this new communications landscape is actually to build connections with your customers, having dialogue, deepening relationships. So that was the ideal of social media marketing. And from that perspective, I would say that social media has been quite a big fad, in the sense that the advertising seems to be the dominant logic that companies use social media for. So, as said in the article, unfortunately, many companies, especially smaller ones, tend to create their social media presence for a single purpose only: to disseminate massive commercial information on their social media web pages in the hope of attracting customers, even though these customers may find commercially intensive content annoying. And I fully agree with this. So, even though there is a lot of discussion, and we have already talked about the idea of virality and this interaction, many-to-many communications, few companies even realize that that's the actual unique opportunity of social media, or even if they realize, they still do or use social media just like they use all other media spaces. So they're just, pushing product related or other commercial information and trying to reach customers with these new channels. And why that might not be the best idea of how to use social media is because, as we have discussed, I believe I brought this up earlier, people do not use social media for the purpose of investigating products and brands, or at least that's not one of the primary purposes. Instead, if you think about what people want to do on social media, they want to network with their friend and connect with their friends. They want to perhaps hear some new things, new issues. It's a lot about this interaction. And now, if you're using social media similarly to how you use mass media, so you have a product and promotion and then you push it, you are mainly interrupting people. It doesn't align with the social media use motivations. So this is something that I would like all the marketers to think and reflect a little bit. So when you are thinking of those social media campaigns, how do they really fit the format and style of the platform that you're using? Generally, you could argue that the social media use motivations relate to social interaction. We're interested in people. We want to connect with them. We want to hear what people think. And if you are trying to boost your product messages for this mechanism that is going on social media, chances are that not many people hear your message. So the key statement I'm trying to make here is that when you think of social media campaigns, you should really think about what could be the type of content that would fit this platform, that would fit the kind of tone and style of discussions, and then how you could be part of this social interaction and social connectedness with your messaging rather than just pushing your commercial messages. So if you ever want to reach engagement with your social media content, it has to be something else than, pushing your product out there. Now, in this same article, they also have this very nice taxonomy of social media marketing strategies, which is obviously a simplification, but we need these simplifications to really think about what are the major alternatives to use social media for business purposes. And they divide the strategies in this article into four different types. One is the social commerce strategy, which is about, promoting and selling. It's about the conventional way to use social media as a channel to advertise or promote your products, and then you hope that you will reach customers and they will buy your product. So that is similar logic to mass media advertisements, perhaps besides the fact that you can target more accurately, but the logic is the same. Usually the engagement tends to be quite low, but the idea is to advertise, so you are trying to, reach customers. Then the second one, social content strategy, it's still, firm initiated, but it allows two-way communication. So the idea is now very close to the content marketing ideal that we have been talking earlier. So it's not about the product, it's not about a promotion, but actually you create content that customers might actually care about. So it could be something informational, it could be something entertaining that you're offering for the customers, which is not just directly related to your product. In the social monitoring strategy, we are talking about the customer-initiated two-way communications. So the idea of participating in social media is not actually, to promote or create content, but instead you want to listen to the customers. You want to maybe participate in conversations. You want to learn what customers want, what kind of needs they have, and so on. So it's about, creating market knowledge, creating customer knowledge of what kind of things customers are frustrated about or what would they like to have. Get some feedback for your products and services and so on. So that is social monitoring strategy. And finally, the last option, which is quite rare, but associated with the highest engagement, is the social CRM strategy. So CRM stands for Customer Relationship Management. So social CRM strategy is about empowering and engaging. And in practice, it's about co-creating something with customers. So it's not just, communicating and talking, but actually it's about crowdsourcing ideas of what kinds of product services we should offer for the customers. Maybe it could be something related to personalization or tailoring these products and services for the customers. And yes, this is maybe the most difficult strategy to think about, but I'll show you some examples and hopefully I can clarify the meaning of all these four strategies that are clearly distinguishable from each other. Okay, here is the social commerce strategy. And again, there are, video examples that you can check, but this is the conventional logic. So Old Spice created this video. This is a very old campaign, but I remember this has been often mentioned as one of the most viral campaigns of our time. And it was not only happening on social media, but social media got a lot of virality for it. But it was also, the same commercials were running in traditional media. Whatever the case is, this particular campaign got these viral effects, and why, I don't know. It was about the product, but apparently these commercials were considered funny. So that is maybe one way to gain some sort of traction in social media, so that you don't take yourself too seriously, but you're actually at the same time when promoting products, you're doing it in a funny way, in a way that customers like to resonate with. In the next example, I might have mentioned Dove earlier on this course as a company that is a good example of this idea brand that I mentioned earlier. So Dove is obviously selling these cosmetics products, and for decades, I could say they have been focusing on natural beauty as their key value proposition. So they have been talking about this body positivity and that we should accept our, looks as they are, rather than try to, use a lot of makeup and these types of things. We should just, care about our natural beauty. And Dove has had tons of highly successful campaigns that have gained traction. So you can check out some of them on Dove's YouTube channel or wherever you could probably find them. Here is one example about the Selfie Talk, which is about social media's impact on girls' self-esteem. And basically, in this video, they show a process how this young girl is modifying her looks to look cool on social media. And it's highly, emotional video that makes you really think what's going on in the society and why do people really care so much about their looks that they are, willing to modify how they look so much, and especially it's a young girl. So a lot of discussion about these campaigns in different media spaces. So just one, example of a campaign, which is basically it has zero relevance for Dove's products because Dove wants to be positioned as this idea brand of natural beauty rather than a provider of cosmetics products. So I think it's a very, very exciting case company to follow from that perspective. Social monitoring strategy, as mentioned, is about to listen and learn. It's about generating market knowledge. And this is, of course, something that happens mainly behind the scenes. So it's harder to find a great video of how to do this and so on. But I found this Southwest Airlines social media listening center, and they have invested a lot for creating this center that is responsible for monitoring social media conversations regarding Southwest Airlines. So they are trying to figure out, problems and react to them. They are trying to figure out customer needs and the things that customers like about Southwest Airlines, the things that they hate about Southwest Airlines. So this is a highly strategic initiative because they use this for developing their products and improving their service overall. So this video gives you a glimpse of that. But as said, it's more difficult to find these cases as they are not so publicly announced. However, after if you watch the video of Southwest Airlines and you wonder how this actually works, they use these types of social listening tools, sometimes also called social media listening tools or news media listening tools, and so on. How do these work? So they actually operate a little bit similarly to Google or Google Alert, was at least earlier one of these monitoring software. So you can set keywords, for example, the company name or brand name and competitors' names or competitive brand names, after which the software starts to monitor the appearance of those words on the internet. So if you're Southwest Airlines, you can put Southwest as the keyword, and maybe you need to delimit that a little bit. And then you start getting hits of the appearance of your brand name in different types of discussions. So that's how it basically works. And you can use it for, well, first of all, monitoring these conversations, but you can get answers for the types of questions such as what do people say about our firm, brand, product, service? What do they tell about the competitors' brands or their products, and so on? You can also compare the tone of discussion. So if you are Southwest Airlines and you're competing against American Airlines, you can see like which brand is discussed in a positive tone rather than a negative tone. So you can also get some sort of proxies for your kind of brand image. So how positive the feedback from customers is compared to some competitors, for example. But also, if you expand your keyword search, you can also figure out the hot topics in the industry or related industry. What's now topical? What is it that people are talking about? That might give you leverage for creating content that seem to be gaining traction at this moment. You can also monitor where the discussions take place and what types of social media channels or some other websites. Who are the key influencers about the industry-related topics and so on? So you can also figure out how to maybe network with them, and so on. Here's just a funny example how social media monitoring was used in a campaign produced by Snickers, and I think Snickers have had. Again, for a long time in their commercials, they had this idea that you're not yourself when you're not when you're hungry, and then the Snickers is the answer for that. So there's a highly innovative campaign where they collaborated with 7-Eleven, and they were monitoring the tone of discussion on the internet. And whenever the tone of discussion was getting more negative, the price of the Snickers got down and the other way around. So this was also quite nicely tied to the societal discussion about internet as the angry place or internet with a lot of, hate speech and these types of things. So I think it was definitely one of the most innovative campaigns I've seen where social media monitoring was used. Then next, social CRM strategy. So it is about empowering and engaging and really taking customers on board to not just communicate but also develop the offerings that the customers have. And LEGO, that I might have mentioned earlier, they have, for example, these LEGO Ideas, which is basically a community where you can suggest, so the LEGO fans can suggest different types of LEGO products, and then others can vote which suggestions are better than the others, and so on. And then LEGO tries to implement all those highly appreciated ideas of what kind of LEGOs you could build, and then they commercialize them. So they are actually taking LEGO fans on board to develop their offerings. I think it's a really, really interesting way. This usually happens in social media spaces, only in this big brand communities. It's really hard to get sufficient amount of people to, participate in your community. But then again, this idea of co-creating products and services is very common in B2B, but it's not so publicly announced. So it's quite common that companies take their customers to develop their offerings and service packages and so on. But when it comes to this social CRM, where social media is the vehicle, then it's usually about these big brands. I remember seeing Starbucks, LEGO, what else? Dell Computers and so on. Finally, maybe something that has been related to all of those four strategies, but it's not quite any of those strategies. Maybe this is the closest one to the social monitoring. But anyway, as a notion, when we talk about social media, we often talk about, how to communicate to customers and so on. But it's important to notice that social media also serves as a very good customer service channel. And why it serves very nicely is that, first of all, when there is a problem, let's say KLM is one of those companies that have been very active with their social media customer service. So let's say there are delays on flights, or maybe their mobile app is not working. When you have trained your customers to use social media channels, then you can just post that we have this type of a problem. And then you save all those phone calls where, 1,000 people will call to your customer service and wait in line. When something major happens, then they will not go through, but they can post on social media what's going on, and they can do this very quickly. And when there is a question, someone is asking something, and then the company responds, then you're essentially not just responding to this particular customer, but everyone else can see this. So there's a lot of scalability of customer service in that way when it's about a common problem. But also it might be a good channel. It's quite easy channel to use for any queries. So might work for many companies. Then as a notion, some of the big brands also have these support communities, which is now the holy grail of customer service. So for example, this Apple support community, you can post any Apple related question. You have a problem, you cannot get something done with your Apple phone or things like that. And then you have these fans of Apple who are responding to you. So you essentially you don't even have your own customer service, but actually it's the customers who are serving each other to figure out problems for common issues that they're encountering. So I think this is a really, really interesting idea to think about. But again, I would say that usually this only happens when you have lots of brand fans. So for an SME, might not be the most successful way to deliver your customer service. Next, let's move on to discuss about the influencer marketing. As mentioned in a previous lecture, influencer marketing is a collaboration between popular social media users and brands to promote brands' products or services, or at least this is the generic view of what influencer marketing is. I personally think it's a much broader phenomenon, but I do agree that this is the most stereotypical way to think about influencer marketing. So there is an influencer who is promoting a product, and it's a campaign where the commissioner company has sort of hired the audience of the influencer so that the influencer will create content to his or her audience. And that's it. But let's take a little more academic perspective to the topic. Here is the first definition for influencer marketing by Leung et al. This is probably the at least one of the most influential papers in the influencer marketing literature. So they define it as a strategy in which a company selects and incentivizes online influencers to engage their followers on social media in an attempt to leverage these influencers' unique resources to promote the firm's offerings with the ultimate goal of enhancing firm performance. So, pretty much similar to the earlier one. Maybe I'll just highlight here the leveraging of the influencers' unique resources as the key element. And often, this resource can be the expertise of these influencers. But more commonly, especially in B2C contexts, so business to consumer contexts, is the key resource is the engaged following that these influencers have. And especially if that audience profile kind of fits the brand who wants to do this collaboration, then it's usually a very good match. I've personally been involved in research on B2B influencer marketing, so I just thought that I would like to tell a word or two about that. And the key distinction to consumer companies who are doing influencer marketing is that business-to-business companies are not so enthusiastic about the sizable audience or following of the influencers. But instead, B2B companies are looking for influencers who are credible, who have some special expertise related to the industry that they're representing. So it's a little bit different type of a process. So if we think about these two different like large categories of industries, in B2C, it's a lot about hiring the audience or hiring the influencer to reach their audience. And then again, in business to business, it's often hiring the expertise. And in B2B, what we found out in our research, it's rarely just about promoting products and brands, but instead, it's much more aligned with the idea of content marketing. So it's usually content that is informational or maybe sometimes entertaining, but especially in B2B, it's something informational in nature that is sort of like the product of this influencer marketing. Whereas in B2C, it's quite common that it's about promoting the firm's offerings. While I do not, well, let's put it this way, that I do think that this definition is valid, but I don't think that influencer marketing, even in B2C, is explicitly about promoting the company's offerings. I think it can go much beyond that, and actually have an example later on about B2C campaign that is not about the offerings. But yeah, some key definitions you don't have to remember they by heart, but maybe the key idea is that in B2B it's much more about the expertise of the influencer, and then in B2C it tends to be more related to the audience and the engaged following that the influencer has. Some other key differences between the B2C and B2B influencers per se is that there are very few B2B influencers who consider their primary profession as an influencer. Instead, the profiles of these influencers are usually business leaders, consultants, researchers, and something of that nature. So they don't usually call themselves influencers. They just happen to be people who have a lot of influence and credibility that the commissioner companies can leverage, which really changes also the logic how influencer marketing is done, because B2C influencers tend to be very good at creating content. You know, they're professionals of creating engaging content, whereas B2B influencers are just experts. So you need to support them a lot if you want to do good B2B influencer marketing. Here are also some other key distinctions between the two. Maybe I could also mention the motivation behind the influencers to participate. So definitely B2C, at least the very influential ones, they want to get money. It's their profession. Whereas in B2B, it's not so much about money. It might be involved, but B2B influencers are mainly interested in mutual interest. So maybe there is a way to increase the visibility of this influencer and the company it is representing, and the commissioner company, for example. So that also changes the logic quite much. Why does influencer marketing work? The short answer is, people are interested in people, not organizations. So the organizations are always faceless entities, and people do not, or let's say they are rarely interested in any organizations. It is said that brands want to build relationships with customers, but rarely do customers want to have relationships with brands. Instead, they want to have relationships with human beings. And the figure I just took quite randomly from influencer marketing research that demonstrates or communicates the two key mechanisms what makes influencer marketing influential. What's the sort of the asset of the influencers? And one road is the credibility. So when we have these relationships, or maybe these influencers are some other, you know, recognizable personalities, we tend to consider them credible. And when the influencers are talking about the product, people believe in them much more than when the faceless organizations are saying that our brand is amazing. We are very skeptical about advertising, and even though influencer marketing indeed is a form of advertising, it still happens to be so that when it comes from a person, we sort of associate it a little bit with this word of mouth kind of behavior. Even though we know it's an ad and they get money by promoting this product, we still consider it credible. We still probably at least think that, okay, this is a famous influencer. If the product was really bad, he or she would not be willing to participate. They don't have to participate in all the campaigns that companies would like to execute. But the other, and perhaps the most interesting phenomenon that has gained a lot of academic attention is something called parasocial interaction between the influencer and the audience. So, besides being credible, it has been noted that influencers really create these relationships with people that might mimic something like a friendship. So even though we know that, okay, I'm following this influencer regularly, I know that I don't really know who this person is, but psychologically, we start building some sort of a connection with this person, that we have this subconscious feeling that we know this person. You might have encountered something similar, but this same phenomenon happens also when it comes to celebrities, that when there is this famous celebrity who is often in the media, we subconsciously are trying to think, or are not trying to, but we are forced to think that we somehow know who these people are, even though we are only aware of their media performance. So I've had a couple of memories or instances where I have said I've said hi on the street for someone I have never met, and then based on their bustled expression, I've noticed that as an afterthought that I don't actually know that person, that it was just someone who I have seen in the news or in some other media. So the same idea basically with influencers, that even though we kind of know that we don't know them, however, we've been following them for a long time regularly, and then we start subconsciously form something that can be considered a type of friendship, that we are trusting in them. And again, when they promote something, it might subconsciously feel like you get a recommendation from a friend. So these are at least a couple of key mechanisms that are known to the question of why does influencer marketing work? There are many types of influencers. One common way to distinguish between the influencers is to look at their followers. So there might be some of these influencers who have maybe not that many followers, but they might be highly engaged. And then again, you might have these influencers who have just super big following. Perhaps the connection between the audience might be more distant. This is one way to classify influencers, and quite self-evidently, if you want to collaborate with these influencers, the number of followers often correlates with how much they are gonna charge for the collaborations. So, in quite many papers I've seen, it is said that it's actually more effective to focus on many smaller influencers, nano or micro influencers, rather than going with the one mega influencer. But this might be very context dependent as well. The other way to look at influencers is to think about their expertise or the source of influencers. So you have the celebrity types, then you have authorities like Seth Godin here. He's probably one of the biggest authorities in the field of marketing. You might have the analyst, you might have the activist, some sort of expert, insider, journalist, all types of different profiles. And these different profiles might have very different motivations to participate in your influencer marketing campaign. So some of them want to find sponsorships for opportunities. Some of them want to boost their readership with exclusives. And this is, by the way, going back to the business-to-business influencers. Many of these types are probably more relevant for B2B collaborations. And again, you can see that the motivations might vary. Although this particular figure, I don't know what it's based on, but perhaps giving you just an idea that there are different types of influencers. Then, how do we manage influencer marketing? And this is one of the topical themes into academia. There are risks when using influencers, and the risks are two-sided. So, as an extreme case, I mean, you might collaborate with an influencer, and then the next day you notice that this influencer has done something really stupid, and you get really bad PR. All the other way around, the influencer agrees on collaboration, and then after the campaign, the influencer realizes that, okay, I've been promoting sustainable products, and now the news is that these are the exact opposite of sustainability. So there is this risk when you use influencers for the influencer, him or herself, and then the commission company. But also, if you think about typical marketing communications where the company designs, creates, produces the content, and is fully in control of the content that will be produced. When you want to do influencer marketing, you have to give a lot of artistic freedom for them, first of all, so that they will be interested in collaborating. Most of them are not interested in collaborating in campaigns where the commissioner company dictates that, okay, in this campaign you will have, toothpaste on your hand, and then you're gonna say that this is an amazing toothpaste and things like that. They're not buying that. So you need to lose some control for the influencer so that the influencer, with his or her expertise, can then really create the type of content that he or she knows will resonate with his or her audience. So here are briefly the steps, the key steps in executing influencer marketing. So obviously planning, and you need to think about what is this campaign all about? What are the themes? What are the key messages you would like to deliver? And then you think about what kinds of influencers might be a good fit for your original plans. And there's a lot of preparation and coordination and content production. And these are the stages where the influencers usually want to have a lot of freedom. So the negotiation often goes so that you will tell them that, okay, we are this type of a company, and these are, our values, and we would like that this campaign would highlight these themes or features or, whatever that is. But then you need to give the freedom for the influencer to actually figure out what is, for example, let's say you want to promote sustainability of your company or brand. So you have to give the artistic freedom for them to decide how to bring up this sustainability in ways that resonate with the audience. Influencers are the experts in influencing people, so they usually can come up with highly creative ways to do that. Then there are, of course, other things you need to negotiate. The content distribution: is this content going to be distributed only to the influencers' social media channels, or perhaps to firms' own channels as well, and things like that. And then, of course, evaluation. How do we know that this campaign was successful or not? Is it going to be the impressions or comments or something like that, which is probably not the best indicator of the success of the campaign? Or is there a more elaborate way to somehow connect the campaign with monetary outcomes? That is a very, context-specific issue, how easy or difficult that might be. In the B2B influencer marketing article that I mentioned, we noticed that most companies hadn't really put a lot of thought about measuring a part yet. But also in B2B, the measurement tends to be much trickier than in B2C because the sales cycles might be very long. Here is another article. I'm not going to go through this in detail, but if you're interested in a semi-academic influencer marketing paper, this is quite entertaining by Michael Henlein and his colleagues that talks about some key advices for engaging in influencer marketing, starting from understanding the platform-specific user culture. So you really need to think about the context in that sense. They recommend using long-term influencer partnerships rather than campaigns, when to use what types of influencers. And then, as I mentioned earlier, avoid managing and briefing influencers too closely, because then they will lose the artistic freedom and they will either say that they don't want to be part of this, or then the end result is just not good and feels like an ad. Some examples of influencer marketing. So let me start with the Gymshark. And this was a campaign that was associated with #GymShark66. And the idea behind this campaign was to challenge the followers of Gymshark and other gym enthusiasts to come up with positive habits that they would perform in 66 consecutive days. And then the users were enticed to post and create videos about their progress. How this relates to influencer marketing? Well, it's not easy to launch these types of challenges, so they used some very high-profile influencers to participate in this challenge and then really attract people to participate in the challenge. And apparently, it was highly successful, as said, gathered from somewhere that over 800,000 user-generated posts, which is quite a great result if you think about the reach that those posts might have. And as mentioned, influencer marketing doesn't have to be about the product. And as far as I understood, this campaign had zero relevance to Gymshark products as such. It was about doing these gym exercises and whatnot, positive habits. And again, what we have discussed earlier in this lecture, I do believe that this is the way to really do successful social media marketing. That it's not fully about the product, but instead it's about something else. It's about something that is aligned with the use most motivations of social media. So people are not interested in products, but they might be interested in positive habits, for example. And that's the way how you can reach and get these viral effects. On the left-hand side, you can see the case Prime. Sales over 100, £250 million in 1 year. And this is a rather lengthy case story, but you can read more behind the link. But let me try to condense it into a nutshell. So this was a case about these two guys, KSI and Logan Paul. And these guys were basically influencers, so they had a sizable following so in social media channels, and they were interested in boxing, so they organized these boxing matches where they were the biggest rivals. And then suddenly, after these big internet sensations to followers, boxing was apparently something very interesting. They established this company and started to sell this soft drink, energy drink, whatever it is, called Prime. And it's a really interesting influencer marketing case in the sense that it is probably the most successful launch of a soft drink. If you think about soft drink business, it's highly competitive. You're competing against companies like Coca-Cola and Pepsi. And these guys, I think they have jointly something like 45 million followers, started to promote this brand. And they already had these 45 million people who were listening to their stories. But in addition, they leveraged their influencer networks. So they really leveraged all these influencer friends that they had. And together, they got this quite amazing reach. And perhaps some of you remember, this was maybe a couple of years back when Prime was in everywhere Was this big hype? I'm going back to the Echoverse that I mentioned earlier. You could see that this already also started to get a lot of traction in traditional news media, and that's how I heard this story. So it was in many news channels that these guys launched a company, and now the price of this product was something like, at best, it was, I think, 70 euros or dollars per bottle. Because they were not able to meet the demand with their, newly established production, and now I guess the prices has become a lot down. But anyway, it's quite an interesting case, and thinking about in general, launching a brand that gets almost, you could say, global reach in a very short period of time, is quite an amazing result in a highly competitive industry. Okay, that's it. I'm hoping you have met the learning goals. So after this lecture, students should be able to recognize the unique characteristics of social media. So we talk about the many-to-many communications, about the virality, about the idea that when you do something, it should actually have a bigger effect than advertising, where you're just, one directionally telling something to the consumers. But the whole idea is, how do you create interaction between customers and your company, and between customers and customers? Then distinguish different social media marketing strategies, and especially I would like you to challenge your thinking when you think about social media marketing, that it's not just about advertising on social media. It can be something much more. You can use it as a content marketing tool. You can use it as a social monitoring tool. Maybe you can build communities with customers and so on. Or then you can use influencers. And I hope I was able to give you a rough idea how influencer marketing works. And the short story was that it works because people are interested in people, and these influencers have these sizable and engaged followers who are much more prone to believe in the influencers rather than the faceless organization. I'm hoping you enjoyed the lecture. Have a great day, and see you again.